This is your community radio station, 88.3 Southern FM.
Our introductory music for this evening's The Space Show is Wenzhou, which is Chinese for moonlight. Welcome to The Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie. China and the Moon forms a large part of our program this evening, with comments by Angelo De Grazia, Bill Nelson, Malcolm Davis, Mike Griffin, and Vladimir Putin.
You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
Last year, China made 67 rocket launches to outer space. This year, China plans 100 space launches. These include two manned launches and two cargo launches to maintain the Tiangong space station and the Chang'e 6 mission to gather samples from the lunar far side. Should China's intention to land astronauts on the moon by 2030 be of concern to us? Well, some politicians in the United States think it should. Russian President Vladimir Putin thinks not. Early this year, Space Association of Australia's Angelo De Grazia popped into our studio to discuss China. In the 1960s, it was a race, well, it was thought at the time to be a race, between the Americans and the Russians to get to land on the moon. It turns out the Russians weren't able to do that.
Nearly.
Today, the Russians aren't really in the story at all. But, lapping at America's heels is China. Here's what Bill Nelson thinks. Now, some people are curious about whether China could land astronauts on the moon before the United States, given that the Artemis project is running behind its original schedule. As I indicated, Bill Nelson.
Thanks very much, Irene Klotz with Aviation Week. Senator Nelson, you've been very clear about your concerns about China and China's development and technological initiatives in space. And with these delays in the Artemis program, I'm wondering, first of all, if you have any concerns that China would land astronauts on the moon before the U.S. program could return astronauts on the moon, and if that would be significant at all. Thank you.
Irene, I do not have a concern that China's going to land before us. I think that China has a very aggressive plan. I think they would like to land before us because that might give them some PR coup. But the fact is that I don't think they will. I think it is true that their date that they announce keeps getting earlier. But specifically, with us landing in September of 26, that will be the first landing. And Irene, my answer to your question, remember what I said at the outset. We don't fly until it's ready. Safety is paramount. So whether we fly in September of 26 and land, regardless of your question about China, we don't fly until it's ready.
Angelo De Grazia had these additional comments about China's lunar ambitions. Angelo, have you been watching what China's doing?
I have, to a degree, and I can tell you they are serious. They are serious, and they're bending metal as we speak. They have an ambition of getting to the moon by the end of the decade, and they will do their damnedest to do that. Politically, it puts them, gives them favour. Look how good our system is. But it also allows them to stake a claim. And some people get worried about that. Now, Nelson's a bit, in my view, a little bit overly optimistic because he believes the Chinese are not going to beat the Americans to the moon. Well, let me tell you, if the lunar landing is now September 26, and there's a couple of years' delay to that, which is a possibility, or the technical challenges are just too great, America will miss the mark, and the Chinese will land there. Once they get to Shackleton Crater, are we looking at a South China Sea thing all over again? I don't know. But I can tell you the Chinese are dead serious, and I think the Americans are underplaying it. It's interesting because NASA has been on to Congress about the Chinese getting to the moon and staking a claim before the Americans. So for Nelson to come up now and say not an issue, I think is just part of the, NASA speak at the moment. Don't start a space race. But the race is on.
Okay. Earlier this year, a United States congressional committee held a hearing on the status of the Artemis project. Former NASA administrator Mike Griffin, whose background has been in engineering, spoke about China's space effort.
I now would like to recognize Dr. Griffin for 5 minutes to present his testimony.
In my judgment, the Artemis program is excessively complex, unrealistically priced, compromises crew safety, poses very high mission risk of completion, and is highly unlikely to be completed in a timely manner, even if successful. This matters because our self-declared adversaries, the Chinese Communist Party, together with their Russian partner, fully understand the role that being on the space frontier has in the world of global power politics. We seem no longer to understand that. For the United States and its partners not to be on the moon when others are on the moon is unacceptable. We need a program that is consistent with that theme. Artemis is not that program. We need to restart it, not keep it on track, per the subject of this hearing. The Congress should provide specific direction to the executive branch to address this issue.
The chair now recognizes the gentleman from Florida, Mr. Posey, for 5 minutes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. The Chinese Communist Party threatens almost every component of our government and the lives of Americans, obviously. Ms. Kerner, your written testimony didn't mention China at all. Mr. Russell, you didn't mention China. Ms. Scott didn't mention China. Dr. Griffin, your testimony does mention our adversary, China, and I wonder if you would expound upon why you went to such detail.
In my judgment, China, and I don't want to say China, I want to say the Chinese Communist Party, fully understands and frequently says that their goal is to be the world's great power. They regard the Western democracies as decadent and outmoded and ineffective and inefficient. China's president, he has other titles, Xi, bullies neighboring countries, presumes to take control of international waterways, supervises a military establishment that has recently sunk other people's ships fishing in their own waters. Everything about the behavior of the Chinese Communist Party suggests that they are their adversary, and they say so. To allow a situation to develop where the human frontier is populated by our adversary and we are not there should be unacceptable to this nation and to our Western and Asian partners. It should be unacceptable. We are not on a path to recognize that. The rest of the world looks and will always look to the nations that occupy the frontier and exploit the frontier and extend the frontier as leaders of the world. I believe that's a position that the United States should occupy in preference to our adversaries. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Gray. And you mentioned frontier. Add to that ultimate military high ground. Whoever controls space will control the destiny of this earth.
As you know, I've spent considerable time in the national security side of our space programs as well, and I really consider them to be one program. We can discuss military space at another occasion.
How should America make it our goal to ensure that we emerge as first among equals when it comes to setting standards? We've had a couple hearings on that.
Well, the standards are set by the people who show up. They're not set by the people who watch what happens with others. So by returning to the moon in a focused and expeditious manner, which we are not today, we will inevitably bring along, we will be required to bring along communications and navigation and other infrastructure systems, which we expect others will use as well. By that mechanism, we will have established the standards, just as we did with the ICAO starting at the end of World War II for global air transport. But again, those are facts on the ground that are created by the people who are on the frontier first. They're not created by the people who follow.
Thank you, Doctor.
The views of former NASA Administrator Mike Griffin. Malcolm Davis is a senior policy analyst with the Australian Strategic Policy Institute. In a talk to the members of the Space Association of Australia, he expressed concerns about China's anti-satellite activities.
Space is an operational domain, turning to the military side of things here. The Chinese are developing a full range of satellites for military purposes. Beidou is critical in this regard in supporting positioning, navigation, and timing for the PLA. Obviously, their reconnaissance satellites and communication satellites are also vital in that regard. But they see space very much as an operational domain and are developing a range of counter-space capabilities that can threaten our access to critical space support in a crisis. The PLA rocket forces operate now as many as three direct ascent ASAT types that can threaten our satellites in LEO. And the Chinese have demonstrated both direct ascent and co-orbital counter-space potential out to GEO. But I think more significant are the soft kill capabilities that can threaten satellites in orbit without necessarily creating massive clouds of space debris that threaten space access to everyone. The key point I want to make there, though, is that Chinese counter-space capabilities are real. They're not some threat off in the future. This is the prospect of a space Pearl Harbor in a crisis, I think, is a serious risk. And that's important because of how we rely on space systems to function. And I'm sure you're familiar with this, so I won't labor this. But But essentially, without space capabilities, we can't do any of these critical functions. We're deaf, dumb, and blind. We can't fight in a joint integrated manner. And the chances of us taking heavy casualties and suffering defeat in war is much increased. So the Chinese understand that space, in every respect, I think, is a critical center of gravity for our approach to war.
Many people, and not just Mike Griffin, have expressed concerns that China might dominate the resource-rich lunar South Polar region. How does the United Nations Outer Space Treaty affect territorial and resource claims? Davis commented.
Yes, the Chinese are signatories to the Outer Space Treaty, signed in 1967. Now, the key thing with the OST is that it prohibits the deployment of weapons of mass destruction in space. So obviously there we're talking nuclear, because chem and bio really would have no role in space. So no nukes in space, but it also prevents states from claiming territory in space. So in other words, the Chinese, according to the Outer Space Treaty, can't claim parts of the moon, or can't claim the moon, or can't claim an asteroid. That's prohibited against the Outer Space Treaty. If they did that, they'd violate it. Having said that, there are loopholes or grey areas within the OST whereby the Chinese could put a commercial base on the lunar surface with the purpose of extracting resources. That base quite legitimately could be staffed by PLA officers. The Outer Space Treaty is vague in terms of defining what is military purposes, because the Outer Space Treaty says you can't use the moon or other celestial bodies for military purposes, but it's very vague in defining that. So I think that one of the efforts that's currently underway internationally is to try and establish, firstly, regulatory arrangements that make it more difficult to weaponize space, but secondly, establish norms of responsible behavior.
When George Powell made his 1950 movie Destination Moon, the United Nations Outer Space Treaty was not even thought of, let alone drafted and signed. In the movie, a character named General Thayer is trying to persuade a bunch of industrialists to fund a human mission to the moon. He makes the argument that it would be vital to global security that America be the first country to reach the moon, warning that a foreign power could use the moon as a missile base and thus gain control of the Earth.
We are not the only ones who know that the moon can be reached. We are not the only ones who are planning to go there. The race is on, and we'd better win it, because there is absolutely no way to stop an attack from outer space. The first country that can use the moon for the launching of missiles will control the Earth. That, gentlemen, is the most important military fact of this century.
General Thayer did not name the feared foreign power. However, the 1950s audience would have had no doubt that it was the Soviet Union. Today's audiences might well interpret this as communist China. And, surprise, surprise, the industrialists in the movie agree to fund the moon mission because the United States government won't. In reality, a decade later, the government was funding its civilian space agency to contract industry to build the Apollo lunar spacecraft. And what do George Powell's 1950 astronauts do when they step onto the moon? Well, take a listen.
Claim it, Doc. I'm your witness. Claim it officially. By the grace of God, in the name of the United States of America, I take possession of this planet on behalf of and for the benefit of all mankind.
By the time Neil Armstrong made his momentous step 19 years later, the Outer Space Treaty precluded such a claim.
I'm going to step off the land now. That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Later in that moonwalk, Neil read this.
For those who haven't read the plaque, we'll read the plaque that's on the front landing gear of this LAM. There's two hemispheres, one showing each of the two hemispheres of Earth. Underneath it says, "Dear men from the planet Earth, first set foot upon the moon, July 1969, AD. We came in peace with all mankind." It has the crew members' signatures and the signature of the President of the United States.
You will note the probably unintentional nod to George Pell. China acceded to the 1967 treaty at the end of 1983, so presumably won't be making territorial claims. Over in Moscow, United States television personality Tucker Carlson recently sat down for a friendly chat with Russian President Vladimir Putin. They discussed China. Through a translator, Putin sees Western concerns about China as a boogeyman story.
The world should be a single whole. Security should be shared rather than meant for the golden billion. That is the only scenario where the world could be stable, sustainable, and predictable.
The question is what comes next, and maybe you trade one colonial power for another, much less sentimental and forgiving colonial power. I mean, is the BRICS, for example, in danger of being completely dominated by the Chinese economy, in a way that's not good for their sovereignty? Do you worry about that?
Well, we have heard those boogeyman stories before. It is a boogeyman story. We're neighbors with China. You cannot choose neighbors just as you cannot choose close relatives. We share a border of 1,000 kilometers with them. This is number one. Second, we have a centuries-long history of coexistence. We're used to it. Third, China's foreign policy philosophy is not aggressive. Its idea is to always look for compromise, and we can see that. The next point is as follows. We are always told the same boogeyman story, and here it goes again, through an euphemistic form, but it is still the same boogeyman story. The cooperation with China keeps increasing. The pace at which China's cooperation with Europe is growing is higher and greater than that of the growth of Chinese-Russian cooperation. Ask Europeans, aren't they afraid? They might be, I don't know. But they are still trying to access China's market at all costs, especially now that they are facing economic problems. Chinese businesses are also exploring the European market. Do Chinese businesses have small presence in the United States? Yes, the political decisions are such that they are trying to limit their cooperation with China. It is to your own detriment, Mr. Tucker, that you are limiting cooperation with China. You are hurting yourself. It is a delicate matter, and there are no silver bullet solutions.
Well, whatever your view, China will be ever more active in space this year. Now, as the draft script for this evening's The Space Show report was being put to bed, a new twist in the debate occurred. An article by Chin Stephen Chinnan of the South China Morning Post on March the 4th had been picked up by media outlets around the world. In the article, Chinnan says that Chinese aerospace agencies have outlined how China's domestic 600 million camera Skynet surveillance system would be installed in China's International Lunar Research Station. The purpose would be to watch lunar assets and track foreign visitors to the research station. The newspaper report says that if abnormalities are detected, the system will send alarm signals and initiate appropriate response measures. In part, this is what the article asserts.
China plans to establish all-seeing surveillance on the moon after drawing on the successes of the country's massive video surveillance network, Skynet, for a system it says will ensure the security of its forthcoming lunar base. Agencies behind the project say the lessons of Skynet will inform how they build and operate the optical surveillance system for China's lunar research station. Skynet, or Tianwang, is the world's largest video surveillance network, with more than 600 million cameras, averaging one camera for every two adult Chinese citizens and covering virtually every nook and cranny of the country. The construction and operation of the optical surveillance system for the International Lunar Research Station can draw on the successful experience of China's Skynet project. The Lunar Exploration and Space Engineering Center of the China National Space Administration said in a paper published in the Chinese academic journal Acta Optica Sinica on February 22. The co-authoring organizations, which also include the Chinese Academy of Sciences, the China Aerospace Science and Technology Corporation, and Zhejiang University, are the main agencies that manage and execute China's lunar program and play a major role in setting technical standards. China's lunar version of Skynet will comprise a large number of high-performance security cameras operating in visible light or infrared zones. These cameras, each of mass just 100 grams, will be equipped with artificial intelligence-driven chips, capable of identifying, locating, tracking and aiming at suspicious targets independently, according to the paper. It said that if abnormalities were detected, the system would promptly generate alarm signals and initiate appropriate response measures. The paper did not specify what those measures might be. After arriving on the moon in batches, the cameras would automatically connect to each other, achieving seamless coverage of the station area, according to the paper. The proposed lunar research station, with a radius more than 6 kilometers, is a sprawling complex. It will house a command center, power station, communication hub, scientific facilities, and a fleet of robots. The station will even have its own satellites for remote sensing, navigation, and communication. To ensure its long-term stability and safety, decision-makers say a robust monitoring system is a must and say certain critical zones may even require continuous, 360-degree surveillance. For events such as the arrival and departure of spacecraft carrying international astronauts, the system could provide multi-camera, high-definition live streams to Earth. The authors said this would not only improve the station's operational efficiency, but also solidify China's position as a leading space power. But the vast amount of data generated by the cameras will test its bandwidth and data processing abilities. To overcome these hurdles, Chinese scientists and engineers are leaning on their experience with the Terrestrial Skynet project, where they have developed advanced technologies for efficient data transmission and processing under constrained bandwidths. The Skynet system is rooted in an ancient Chinese proverb that embodies the principle of omnipresent justice. Bringing Skynet to the moon will not be an easy task. According to CNSA requirements, a lunar surveillance camera must have a minimum lifespan of 10 years. During that time, they must withstand the onslaught of high-energy particles in the space environment while functioning across extreme temperature fluctuations from above 100 degrees Celsius during lunar days to as low as minus 180 Celsius during lunar nights. Despite their compact size, the lunar cameras are expected to perform myriad tasks, including capturing both distant and wide-angle views, and they must be able to self-adjust and operate independently if communication with Earth is lost. The lunar Skynet must also be fortified against potential external threats, whether from other nations or terrorist organizations with security standards that may exceed those for terrestrial systems.
China's commercial space sector is growing rapidly. China General Television Network's Wu Lei reports.
A rise in commercial space ventures is driving the development of liquid-fueled rockets, prized for their eco-friendliness and reusability. China's first commercial liquid rocket, Tianlong 2, had its first flight last April. And now, the second Tianlong 2 rocket awaits assembly in Jiangsu province. Chinese commercial rocket company Space Pioneer is also building the larger and more powerful Tianlong 3 rocket, having the same capabilities as SpaceX Falcon 9. With a payload capacity of 17 tons to low Earth orbit and 14 tons to Sun synchronous orbit, Tianlong 3 is slated for its inaugural flight around mid-2024. Space Pioneer founder Kang Yonglai says there's a significant demand for commercial rockets. In 2023, China executed nearly 70 space launches, with private space companies responsible for 20 of them. Besides Space Pioneer, others like Land Space, Orion Space, and Galactic Energy are racing to develop reliable and reusable launch vehicles. Kang Yonglai says his company is also developing heavier rockets. It's believed that advanced launch vehicles could one day bring continental travel experiences to consumers around the world. Satellite internet will play a key role in the 6G and next-generation communication services. This is one of the latest smart satellite factories in Shanghai. Around 300 satellites will be assembled and tested right here per year after 2025. Chinese firms are banding together to build a G60 satellite constellation. Comprising over 12,000 small satellites, Cao Jing and his colleagues at the Shanghai Genesat Aerospace Technology Company are now working around the clock to contribute their bit. Data from the consultant firm iMedia Research estimates market revenue is projected to exceed 2.3 trillion yuan by 2024. With more companies investing in rockets, satellites, and other spacecraft, many believe the booming space sector will generate huge amount of job opportunities as well as applications in the field of science, medicine, tourism, and education.
Attention these days is on the new commercial Chinese launch vehicles. Back in 2016, the excitement was around the arrival at Hainan of the very first Long March 7 rocket.
The Chinese military has moved a Long March 7 rocket to the final launch site. It's one of China's latest generation rockets, and it's expected to blast off in the next few days. CCTV's Wu Lei reports from the launch site in Hainan province.
Moving to the final phase of its preparation, the Long March 7 carrier rocket is now in the process of vertical transportation. Since the rocket arrived here in the middle of May, staff members have been assembling parts and conducting tests.
In the next few days, we will continue the final check on the whole system to guarantee each channel runs well. During the launching process, we will also monitor all the environmental data to provide a reference for future rockets.
Wenchang Satellite Launch Center is the newest and the only coastal launch center in China. After finishing construction in 2014, the Long March 7 carrier rocket launch will be its first mission. The Long March 7 rocket and its payload is now carried on a mobile launch platform where it will be moved from the assembly building to the launch pad. They are 2,800 meters away from each other and may not seem so far apart. But moving a multi-ton rocket on the rail track is never an easy task. The entire moving process took about 3 hours. When the launch vehicle arrives at the launch pad, rotating platforms on the two sides of the tower are swung around it to allow for fueling and final checks.
Today's vertical transportation went very well. In the next few days, we will enter the final fueling and launching process according to the weather conditions.
The rocket uses liquid propellant, which makes it more environmentally friendly than previous modules. The Long March 7 is expected to be launched at an appropriate time between June the 25th and June the 29th. It will transport cargo for China's planned space station and is expected to become the main carrier for future space launches. Gulet, CCTV at Wenchang Satellite Launch Center.
A lot of things need to be done to prepare a rocket for launch, and more so when it is the maiden launch.
Well, China's new medium-lift rocket, the Long March 7, is being transported to Hainan Province. Its maiden flight is scheduled for June, marking the official start of China's Space Lab flight mission. Wang Tongxuan has our story.
The first Long March 7 rocket departed from port of Tianjin on Sunday. The carrier rocket will launch China's first cargo spacecraft and is designed to refuel China's future manned space station. The rocket is liquid-fueled, enabling it to carry 14 tons of goods, 6 tons more than other rockets. The major task of its maiden flight is to fully test its design and compatibility.
Its power and control systems have both been significantly upgraded. We'll also load experimental equipment on it during the flight to test relevant technologies.
The rocket is in a good state after the final assembly and test. The sea state is also conducive for the shipment.
Its maiden flight is the first of the four flight missions of China's Space Lab program. It will also be the first launch mission carried out by China's Hainan Space Launch Center. Wang Dongxuan, CCTV.
The first Long March 7 launch occurred on 2016, June the 25th. Since then, there have been 13 Long March 7 and Long March 7A launches, all bar the third one in 2020, successful. The primary purpose has been to orbit the Tianzhu unmanned automated cargo craft to supply the Tiangong space station. The 13.5-ton Tianzhus carry 6.5 tons of cargo to supply the space station with food, air, fuel, and experiments. This has been The Space Show. I'm Andrew Rennie.